Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show. Sponsored by ESB. Working towards a brighter energy future. ESB.ie.
I'm joined now by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland, for our regular Green Scene slot. Ruth, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, two big topics to talk about today, and one of them is animals shape-shifting in response to climate change. Please explain.
That's right. I mean, as you mentioned at the Vox Pop at the beginning of the show, researchers are seeing animals trying to adapt to climate change, particularly with heating. So we see animals migrating to areas that are cooler or changing the time that they breed or travel to adapt to now warmer areas where they live. But there's been two really interesting pieces of research this year showing two other things happening. Animals changing the shapes of their bodies. And what researchers are seeing is that animals' appendages, so things like their beaks and tails, are getting bigger because those are the parts of the body that help the animals to dissipate heat. Whereas actually body size in some animals is getting smaller because obviously looking at that surface area, if you're smaller, the ratio of your surface area to your body size is bigger, and that could help you to shed heat more effectively.
Big animals, though, I mean, in very hot places, we've got very big animals, rhinos and hippos and giraffes and elephants. You'd think that they'd have all headed off to Sweden.
I know. And in fact, what we're seeing now, I mean, we're looking at the global warming over decades, and clearly evolution, we're used to thinking about it happening over much, much longer time periods and almost imperceptibly. So what we're seeing these effects in is mostly things like small mammals and birds. And, you know, we've talked about birds quite a lot on the show before. They're a very good bellwether of the health of an ecology, and they do have to adapt and they change quickly. So the birds where we've seen these larger beaks are things like cockatoos and parrots that live in tropical areas. But we're also seeing longer tails in things like little shrews and bats' wings increasing small but significant amounts. So you're right, we haven't yet seen elephants like Dumbo with bigger ears to get rid of that heat on the savannah. But certainly, you know, if global warming continues, we will no doubt see animals adapting. I mean, again, with the body size, that was a study that just came out a couple of weeks ago from the Amazon, where obviously there's a lot of these beautiful birds that have been studied very heavily. But looking at over 77 species, nearly every single one of those has become smaller since the 1970s. So this is a real effect that's happening. And I suppose what's important to say is that doesn't mean that these animals are coping. They are trying to adapt. But there's other effects, because if your beak gets bigger, but your beak has evolved to, for example, eat out of a certain plant, if you're a hummingbird, that may impact on your ability to feed. So while birds and animals are trying to adapt to global heating, it doesn't mean that they're coping.
So these effects, I mean, we always think of any kind of evolutionary thing, except at microscopic level in bacteria and viruses and so on, as happening over a long period of time. This is rather shorter than one would have thought that evolution would function.
It is. I think my favourite explanation of evolution and is from Richard Dawkins. And he says, because it's so imperceptible, you don't go to bed young and wake up middle-aged, but somehow that happens to all of us without us noticing. It's a good analogy. But you're right. I mean, in some of these birds, we've seen, you know, a 10% increase in size of beak in just over 100 years. And that is incredibly fast. And it's not what we expect to see on these evolutionary timeframes for warm-blooded animals like birds and mammals. So I think, again, birds are a really good species for us to look at if we're thinking about the health of the planet. So I think these studies are yet another wake-up call, if we need another one, you know, of the impact that our activity is having on the species that we share the planet with.
Now, let's talk about glass. I mean, time was when you got your milk in a bottle. Time was when it was actually delivered every morning. And I believe those bottles used to be, you know, they were retrieved every morning. You left the empties out, having rinsed them, and then they were retrieved. And then they were heat treated, basically, and used again. They weren't necessarily broken up and thrown away. We tend not to do that now with glass. We recycle it, all right, but we don't wash it and use it again.
And I think that's a really, really good point, actually. And I think we need to get back to that. But obviously, we shifted from plastic or from glass to plastic for so many things. And, you know, again, you know, we've talked about plastic before and microplastics and plastics breaking down into the environment. And again, even recycled plastic comes with all sorts of issues. So, I mean, even trying to create ecologically friendly plastic really hasn't worked out that well. And I think it is time that we maybe go back and look at reuse and minimizing our use. Exactly as you said, we need to start looking at washing out containers and using them again. I don't know why we don't have a money back scheme for glass containers here. But I think even with recycling, researchers have been looking to see how we could make glass recycling into a carbon neutral process. So yes, let's start. And I should say, one thing I learned when researching this story is you can actually reuse your glass jars to store food even in the freezer, as long as you don't overfill them. So those nice jars that you get your jam in and stuff, you can wash them out, and they're perfectly good even to keep frozen food in. So you don't even have to go out and buy Tupperwares.
Okay. Given that anything with the water content is going to expand in the freezing, you certainly don't fill it up to the level that the jam was at. Because
exactly.
It'll
just
crack.
Say, don't overfill it, and don't put anything fizzy in it. We all know what happens when you put a beer or something in the freezer. But yet glass, I mean, normally the process to make glass requires immense heat. You know, 1,500 degrees centigrade Celsius to heat limestone and sand and soda ash, and that's actually most of the carbon emissions from glass. But what we found is that if we use crushed recycled glass, we can use much, much less energy. We need less heat. Now, obviously, if we can then get that energy from renewable sources, that can really, really cut our emissions down. So I think, I mean, the good thing is Ireland and Europe have really led the way here. It's one place where we can pat ourselves on the back when it comes to our ambitions. We're at about 87% glass recycling. So, I mean, we should be trying to get that higher. And also, as you said, we just need to be reusing our glass. It's a great material. Mm. It's really versatile, and we can probably use it for more than we think we can.
Now, obviously, people use fossil fuels to fire those furnaces, but it doesn't have to be so. There can be electrically fired furnaces. And if that electricity is generated in a green way, be it wind or wave or whatever it might be, or indeed nuclear, then you've got a zero carbon for the glass.
Exactly, and that's where we can go with glass, and we can do that for our glasses, like our jam jars, but also for glass in our windows and in buildings. So there's a big opportunity here to kind of go back to basics and do something good for the climate.
Interesting text here. Spare a thought for the animals and birds that don't survive to pass on their adaptations due to climate warming. Remember, evolution works by the survival of the fittest only. Adaption does not mean species are coping. Only a minority will make it through because of climate change. That's from Leon.
Absolutely.
That's a good point. There'll be many casualties as the species evolve.
We are, and I would stress that these changes are not a sign of coping. They're really a sign of distress that we need to pay attention to.
All right, Ruth, look, it's fascinating stuff, and glass bottles on your doorstep, maybe even delivered, who knows, and recycled, and you don't get your fresh milk until you give the old milk bottle back, something like that. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland, thank you very much for joining us.